Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Finally, Odell Beckham Jr., finally getting paid. The deal that was in the works, the deal that was coming for quite some time, is finally here. And you've seen the numbers. It pretty much smashes any other deal that any other wide receiver has. A reported 5 years, 95 mil, 65 mil of that guaranteed. So if those numbers are accurate, that new deal sets the bar for receivers in terms of money per year and guaranteed money. The two things that matter most. Money per year, guaranteed money. So, of course, the immediate question was, did the Giants make a mistake in giving him all that money? Let me repeat that. Did the Giants make a mistake in giving him all that money? My answer, no and no. They're not making a mistake. And they're not giving him all that money. They're not giving him all that money. He earned that money. According to Forbes, the New York Giants are worth a reported $3.3 billion. $3.3 billion with a B. Listen, the Giants are not a charity. The Giants do not give away money. And even if they did, Beckham's guaranteed 65 mil would still be a drop in the bucket. Walk around money for them. So they're not giving him the money. He earned the money and he's worth the money. And I'll tell you why. He's putting up Hall of Fame numbers. He deserves to reset the market for wide receivers because he's doing things that guys have never done in the history of the game. Now, normally, when it comes to contracts, I take the approach that you're worth whatever anybody is willing to pay you. But in this case, Beckham is worth 65 mil guaranteed. And I'll do you one better. He's probably worth even more than that and maybe even a hell of a lot more than that. My reasoning, did you see the Giants last year without Odell Beckham? I did. They were garbage. Absolute garbage. And that's not all due to him not being there, but it definitely did play a role. You want to try running that back again year after year? Hell no, you don't. That's why you sign him to a deal like this. And here's the best part. The best part for the Giants is he's only 25. He turns 26 halfway through the year. He's not even in his supposed athletic prime. He hasn't even hit that yet. So if he goes the way he's been going, not only is he going to be worth that money in a couple of years, he'll probably be underpaid. He'll probably outperform the contract. Now, to the other point, and why a lot of you think that he's not worth it, because of the risk. Is there risk involved? Of course. Of course there's risk involved. There's risk involved in any contract. That's the nature of the business. Yes, there is risk involved with this guy. Yes, I've seen his act on the field where he's lost it. Yes, I've seen his act off the field where he's lost it. There is risk involved. But I'm going to argue there's even greater risk in not signing this guy. And even more idiotically, trading this guy. You do not do that with a 25-year-old wide receiver who's doing what he's doing. He changes the team when he's on the field. He sells jerseys. He gives people a reason to show up at the stadium and tune into games. This guy's arguably the most electric guy in the sport. You're right, Rome, but what about all that drama? I get it. I'm not even saying that it doesn't exist. I'm not saying that it's not a part of the equation. It is, just as the ankle injury is a part of the equation. I know about the ankle injury. I know about the drama in the past. But by all accounts, and I'm not there. I haven't spoken to him. But by all reported accounts, he has hit the ankle rehab like a monster. And the Giants have been really pleased with how he's handled his business. So you can put a price tag on that deal. But the reactions from around the NFL, in and outside of his locker room, to me are priceless. First, you had that party in the locker room as broadcast on Sterling Shepard's Instagram. I think that's pretty awesome. And not only awesome, but you can tell me, or you can't tell me, that that group, his crew, is not pumped for Beckham. And that tells me a lot. If the guy was that jacked up on and off the field. There's no way he gets that kind of reaction in his own locker room. It's obvious how much they admire and respect the guy. And then you've got the reaction from players around the NFL. Very similar. Beckham's old LSU teammate, Jarvis Landry, tweeted, quote, "Everything we spoke into existence started way back when." He sighed for his guy. Another wide receiver, Michael Thomas, pumped. Maybe not because he's his guy, but because a big deal for Beckham means a big deal for Thomas down the road. He tweets, "Thank you, at OBJ3. Congratulations, well deserved." And then you've got Cardale Jones reminding everybody how strong his Twitter game is with the following tweet, at Odell. "Hey man, you might not remember me, but I'm your cousin on your great uncle Ray Ray's side. Saw you at the family reunion in 03. Can I have some money?" Congrats on the new deal. Oh, and let me leave you with one more final thought from around the league. This cryptic or mysterious tweet from one Jalen Ramsey. Quote, "It's going to be a show very soon. Hashtag Batman versus the Joker." He's right. Week 1, September 9th, New York at Jayville. Beckham v. Ramsey. Batman versus the Joker. Can't wait.
Can't wait.
Beckham got paid. And he deserves it because he earned it. And yes, it's a gamble, but it's a damn good gamble. Normally, if both sides of a deal are pissed, it's a good deal. In this case, both sides were ecstatic, and they should be, because it's a good deal for both of them. Bottom line, I trust Beckham with this money and with the responsibility. Now, let me ask you, do you trust him with this money and this responsibility? Did the Giants do the right thing? Hit me up. Let me know where you come out. 1-800-636-8686. So I'm leading with that, and I want your thoughts on that. Do you trust Beckham with that money and with that responsibility? In fact, what I'm asking you is, has the guy changed? Do you believe the guy has changed? Do you think the time away from the game gave him a new perspective? Again, I want to be clear about this. I'm not there. I'm not seeing the guy. I'm not talking to the guy. But all the reports are positive, both physically and the way he's leading from the front and the way young receivers on that team are reacting to him. I like the deal. I think it's a good risk. We are joined by quarterback Mackenzie Milton. Mackenzie, really nice to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. How about you?
Good, good. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much. So you're coming off an amazing season for yourself and for your team. So let me start right here. What has the offseason and fall camp been like after a year like that? In other words, does it feel any different because of what you and the team were able to accomplish last season?
In all honesty, no, I think we've kind of had the same mindset in the offseason, attacking waves and, obviously trying to learn a new offensive system and a new defensive system. But I think the attention to detail and, the effort in the weight room and in practices have been the same. We still want to win a lot of games. And, even though we're going to get teams' best shots, we still want to have that hunter's mentality. So I think our team's done a great job of, attacking.
We're talking to Mackenzie Milton. In terms of that mentality, something else I've heard you stress is that a lot of times when a team does have success, people can get lackadaisical, they can get relaxed, and then they'll get punched in the mouth by a team that's hungrier. So how do you go about making sure that nobody is resting on the accomplishments of last season?
Yeah, I think for the most part, our team's done a great job of blocking out outside noise and moving on from what we accomplished last year. I mean, obviously it was a great year going 13-0. But at the same time, we want to be a team that can sustain that and sustain success. And I think we have the opportunity to do that with the talent we have coming back. But at the same time, you gotta go produce on the field. And we can't look forward to week 8, week 9, or when we play North Carolina or Pitt. We gotta look forward to UConn game 1. I told our team we're gonna be in for a rude awakening if we get too far ahead of ourselves. If we start looking far in the future, we just got to take it one game at a time. And I think we've done a good job of attacking it that way.
UCF quarterback Mackenzie Milton, my guest. You mentioned some of the changes. Of course, you start with the departure of your head coach Scott Frost and the arrival of Josh Heupel. What's it been like working with him so far?
It's been great. He's a good guy, and I think he's a great teacher at the quarterback position and offensively as well. I get to learn under two of the best offensive minds in college football, which is has been great for me. You know, I think I've improved as a player under Coach Heupel's direction. I think it's going to show come Thursday night, and I think our team's going to be a very good offensive team and a very good defensive team under Randy Shannon as well.
Time is something that none of us ever have enough of. Simple Contacts can help you start seeing more of it with their online eye exam. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in just minutes. No more doctor's offices or waiting rooms. You take a 5-minute vision test from your phone or computer. It's reviewed by a licensed doctor. You receive a renewed prescription and reorder your contacts. All you need is your current contacts, an internet connection, and 10 feet of space. Do you have an unexpired prescription? Just upload a photo or your doctor's info and order your lenses. Instead of heading to the doctor every single year to renew your prescription, take a few minutes out of your day and do it on your own time and your own terms. Please note, this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. It is vision care for the 21st century. The vision test is only $20. The contact lens prices are unbeatable. Standard shipping is free. And best of all, we are offering a promotion for our listeners. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter code Rome at checkout. Once again, $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter Rome at checkout. Then during the offseason, you also went to the Manning Passing Academy. I'm curious about that. What was that experience like, and what did you take away from that?
Man, it was awesome. Getting to meet Peyton, Eli, Archie, and Cooper. Those are three of the best quarterbacks of all time, in my opinion. And, you know, just, you know, all the quarterbacks, college quarterbacks, got to sit down for about an hour, this spitball questions to Eli and Peyton, and you know, that was very cool. I mean, they are as advertised, great people, great guys, and you know, they're first class when it comes to that. And it was a great experience for me, and I hope I get to go again sometime.
UCF quarterback Mackenzie Milton, my guest, and on top of that, you were also a counselor at the Elite 11. Now, the story goes that you were not invited when you were in high school. So how did that feel to go there as a counselor based on what you've accomplished in college?
You know, it was very cool. I mean, obviously, it was a bummer not getting to go in high school, but I think everything happens for a reason. So, you know, it was cool to go out there as a counselor and see, you know, the next generation of great college quarterbacks. You know, I got to see Tua Tagovailoa's little brother, Talia Tagovailoa, who I've known since he was a young kid. So it was fun to see him out there and see Tua out there, as well as, you know, some of the other great quarterbacks in college football. So it was a cool experience for me, just getting to learn under Trent Dilfer and George Whitfield and those guys. So it was a blast, and you know, I'd definitely be interested in doing that again.
You know, Mackenzie, you mentioned Tua. You're of course from Hawaii. You're part of that new generation of Hawaiian quarterbacks, and I want to hit on that in a minute. But in terms of Tua, you and Tua have a friendship that go back to when you were both in Pop Warner football team, or in mm-hmm. you played Pop Warner football. What were those days like? What do you remember about that?
Man, I just remember Tua being 10, 11 years old, throwing the ball 50 yards. And, you know, I never seen a kid throw the football like that. He was my quarterback. I was his running back. And then he ended up going to a team that was closer to where he lived. So our team needed a quarterback, and that's kind of how I started playing QB. But, you know, he's always been a special player and an even better person. So it's fun to see him, you know, where he's at now and where I've been able to get to. And it's kind of cool how things come to fruition, you know, with a lifelong friend.
I mean, so what about that? When you look at what both of you have done in college, how much pride do you have in that, what you've both accomplished and what you could still do going forward? I mean, does the thing feel weird, like a dream, or does it all feel pretty normal and what you expected?
I would say a little bit of both. You know, I think the both of us, we've always been very competitive young men, and you know, I think we always kind of envision ourselves being good players at the collegiate level, and you know, kind of leading a group of young guys. But at the same time, you know, it's definitely not something that takes for granted. You know, being a young kid playing on the same team as him and seeing him winning a national championship and playing really flawless in the second half. So, I mean, it's been a lot of fun to see where, you know, he's come from and to where and where I've come from, and to see what's going on now and to see what's going to even happen in the future. I think it's really only uphill from here.
UCF quarterback Mackenzie Milton joining us here in the jungle. And of course, where you come from is Hawaii. And you've said that Hawaii definitely takes care of its own like no other place. How would you describe that support and the love that you receive from back home?
I mean, it's huge. You know, I was actually committed to stay back home and go to University of Hawaii. But, you know, I made a decision to come out here to Florida because I believe in Coach Ross. I believe in the system he ran. And, you know, it's the best opportunity, the best team, the best conference I had the opportunity to play in. So, I mean, I rolled the dice. But even with that, even with not staying home, people still fully support me. And whenever I go home, it's always open arms. And, you know, some people kind of say, oh, I wish you would have stayed home, but you made the right decision for yourself. And, you know, still having that support back home is huge for me. And I think it's the same with Tua. People would have loved if he stayed home, but, you know, he made the best decision for himself and his family. So just having that support back home is huge. And I think, you know, it's not just me and Tua. It's Jordan Ta'amua. It's Marcus Mariota. All those guys, they have that same support system back home, and it definitely means a lot.
You know, at the same time, it was not that long ago that UCF was 0-11, and you're coming off a 13-0 mm-hmm. season, and there's so much buzz and so much positivity around that program right now. How much have you seen the program grow and change in the time that you've been there?
In all honesty, you know, when I got there, it was hard to believe that they came off a 0-11, 0-12 season because just the talent that they had, you know, there's a number of guys that got drafted last year and the year before that. So I think it's just a more so of a, you know, an in-house thing, whether it's problems in the locker room, you know, problems with the old coaching staff or something like that. Because I think, you know, it's hard to go undefeated, but it's pretty hard to lose every game as well. So there's got to be some problems internally. And I think Coach Frost came in and did a great job of building the culture that can be sustained. And, you know, Coach Hype's doing a great job of continuing that. So, you know, I think UCF has all the tools to be a special program for a long time.
So let me finally ask you this. What about your role in the whole thing? For instance, when you leave UCF and you move to the next level, you'll do so having broken so many school records and really helped change the standard and the expectation for that program. Look, I know you're not looking to make it about yourself, but what does it mean to you that you've been a part of a group of players that have had that kind of impact on that school and that program?
Yeah, it definitely means a lot. You know, we talk about leaving your jersey in a better spot than you came into it. You know, I think that's what it's all about. You know, the guy that was wearing number 10 was Shaquille Griffin, who's the starting corner for the Seahawks when I came in. And, you know, that's some big shoes to fill for myself, so I hold myself to a high standard in that sense. And, you know, it's my job for the next number 10 that comes in to show him the way it's done, to show him the ropes. And, you know, I think if each player does that, then, you know, that's a great recipe for success. And I think guys have bought into doing that, just leaving their jersey in a better place they found it.
It's a great point. He was eighth in the Heisman voting last year, getting a lot of Heisman attention early on this preseason. And it starts up again on Thursday. Number 21, UCF, going up against UConn. UCF quarterback Mackenzie Milton. Mackenzie, you handled that like a boss. Great to have you on the show, man. Really nice to talk to you this morning. Have a great week, and I hope we can do it again soon.
Appreciate you, Jim.
The countdown to Liberty Weekend is on. Make it the most memorable one yet with a Master-Built Smoker. Craft your masterpiece and enjoy a slow smoke meal with a Master-Built Smoker. Whether you're a beginner or a seasoned professional, you'll find that just right smoker for your backyard cookout. It's easier and it tastes better than grilling. Load the smoker up with your favorite foods, set the time and temp, and walk away. Spend more time with your family and friends. It's available at Home Depot, Lowe's, Sam's Club, Academy, Bass Pro, and Cabela's. For more information, tips, and recipes, visit masterbuilt.com. Lendale White would tell you Ohio State sucks. I'm going with Baylor. And I'm not talking about their football team either. I could care less about their football team at this point. If you have listened to this program in the last few years, you probably know that if I'm talking about Baylor football and the Baylor athletic department, it's not a good thing. You know, because of the sexual assault scandal that managed to somehow get worse at every single turn. You know, the one that an independent investigation revealed at least 19 sexual assaults involving football players, and that might even be on the low side, because more recent lawsuits allege more than 50 sexual assaults involving football players over a 4-year period under Art Briles may have happened. I mean, I could spend an entire hour revisiting the horror show that was Baylor football under Art Briles. but I'll just stop. I'll stop at this piece from the Houston Chronicle Report. Quote, Briles and former athletic director Ian McCaw allegedly discussed a gang rape that involved five football players. Rather than go through proper channels to report the incident, McCaw kept it in-house and went to Briles and his staff. When he did, Coach Briles studied the names on the piece of paper. Quote, those are some bad dudes, Coach Briles told an assistant coach. The document states, why was she around those guys? End of quote. That's not even a full paragraph. And it includes a gang rape, the cover-up of a gang rape, and the condemnation of the victim. I mean, I don't even have words for how insane, how disgusting the actions of the players and the administration that supported them was. I mean, every single time there was a chance for Briles or Baylor to do the right thing, they not only didn't do the right thing, they managed to do an even worse thing. And it wasn't just an Art Briles thing, because multiple players were suspended earlier this spring for sexual assault. And just when you thought that things could not get any worse at Baylor, Baylor does the most Baylor thing ever and manages to dive even deeper into the sewage. A report from PR Week opens with this sentence, quote, Baylor University infiltrated sexual assault survivor groups to shape PR strategy and talking points on how to handle the groups and student demonstrations, according to two sources familiar with the matter. And in case that sentence was a little too vague, try this one on for size. Quote, Baylor had, I don't know what else you'd call it, a mole that would interact with survivor groups, said the source. Right, Baylor, a school that was allegedly trying to do the right thing when it came to addressing sexual assault on campus, had a mole working with survivor groups. A mole. You know, the kind of intelligence gathering technique that the Soviets and the Americans engaged in during the Cold War. Except the relationship between a school and students who survive sexual assault is not supposed to be a Cold War. But from the sounds of this report, the Baylor administration saw it exactly that way. That the student survivors, not the rapists, were now the enemy of the school. Yeah, because that sounds completely insane and depraved. But let me continue with another quote from that article. Quote, one source familiar with the matter identified the mole as Matt Burchett, director of student activities at Baylor, whose job is to coordinate student pursuits such as picnics, parties, and demonstrations. The source said he, acting as a liaison with the university officials, played damage control on their behalf. It goes on, quote, Burchett helped to arrange demonstrations for survivor groups and passed on what he learned to school officials and the communications department, sources said. And there's more, quote, when these groups organized on campus to comfort each other and demand action from former Chancellor Kenneth Starr, Burchett would coordinate with them, befriend them, and pretend he was helping them organize vigils and demonstrations about sexual assault, the source added. And we're not done yet. There is more, quote, he also tried to shape the group's public statements. He encouraged it not to say that Baylor, quote, failed the survivors or Baylor failed to create a safe environment. Two sources said when the group was preparing to send a letter to Starr, he suggested edits, end quote. So the guy arranging demonstrations for survivor groups was allegedly meeting with the groups and passing along the information to school officials and the communications department. He was allegedly listening to survivors of sexual assault, pretending to care, hearing their stories that I'm guessing they believed they were sharing in confidence. And then he passed that information along to the administration. And not only that, but tried to shape how the survivors spoke about what happened to them so it would make Baylor look better. And the only thing I've got in my head right now is I read that report as a string of obscenities that I can never go with here. I mean, I can't believe that's true. I don't want to believe that's true. But knowing Baylor, it's not all that surprising, is it? It's almost like Baylor was more concerned with Baylor than it was with Baylor students who had been sexually assaulted. It's almost like they felt like the real victims here were not the women who had been sexually assaulted, but it was Baylor's reputation. And instead of trying to help the actual sexual assault survivors, the school was allegedly spending time and energy inserting moles into the survivor groups. I mean, how removed from your own humanity do you have to be to do something like that? And what's to say about the people running the show at Baylor that the reaction was not to comfort the survivors, listen to them, clean up that situation, and look at the environment that they created that allowed this happen, but instead they focused on trying to just clean up their own reputation? If the report is true, and man, I hope it's not. I really and truly hope this is not right. But if it's true, it wouldn't surprise me. But if it is true, then everything that happened to Baylor in the wake of this scandal is not nearly enough. I know there are plenty of Baylor alums who had a good experience in Waco. But if this is what this school was doing in the wake of such a massive scandal, at this point, why the hell does that school even exist? Dropping a mole into survivor groups to report back in an attempt to rebuild their reputation. Moles. I mean, seriously, if it's true, and that was being done in the wake of that scandal, why does that school even exist? I mean, seriously, shut it down. Start over. Shut it down. Start over. There's no time in emergencies to make sure your equipment is ready, so make sure you trust your machines to Stabile. Hurricane season is underway across most of the country, bringing extreme wind and rain with little to no warning. It is critical, then, to make sure your generators, power washers, chainsaws, John boats, and other emergency equipment are ready to use when you need them most. Whether you live in a high-impact area or not, planning in advance is a critical step in hurricane preparedness. Stabile, America's number one fuel stabilizer and ethanol treatment, making sure your equipment starts when you need it the most. Mark Stein, he covers the NBA for the New York Times. He is also a Cal State Fullerton legend. Nice friend of the program. We go to him. Mark, good morning. Nice to have you. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
Doing great. Great to visit with you. Let me start with Manu. He announced his retirement yesterday. So what was your reaction when you saw his tweet?
You know, I was hoping he was going to give it just one more year just because Duncan's gone, Parker goes to Charlotte. I thought, you know, maybe Manu will stick it out one more year. And it just, I think the stunner for me is that, you know, Pop used to tell us all the time, the minute Duncan leaves, I'm out. I'm going to follow him out the door. And now he's the last one left. He turned 70 in January. I did not expect Greg Popovich to outlast all of these guys, Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, and obviously Kawhi Leonard. And when Pop goes to training camp at the end of September, it's going to be the first time he's done a training camp without any of the big three. And it's going to be weird.
Mark Stein joining us. You know, I'm going to go back to Manu in a minute, but as you point out, when they go open camp, it is going to be the first time in 22 years that they're doing it without Duncan, without Ginobili, without Parker. So they're going to be very different. So how much longer do you expect Pop to stay around?
I think around the league, everyone, there's been kind of, you know, everyone's guessing. Pop's not going to tell anybody. You know, maybe R.C. Buford, his longtime sidekick in San Antonio, maybe he knows. But I don't think Pop is really confiding that in anyone. So, I mean, this is a guess, and, you know, I guess an educated guess, having covered Pop a long time. You know, a lot of people around the league thought, okay, he'll finish out his last year of his Spurs deal, he'll coach Team USA, and then that'll be the swan song. But, you know, obviously he went through a personal tragedy with the loss of his wife during the playoffs last year. So, you know, I think it's very hard to predict what Greg Popovich might do. And look, even if this is, if he coaches out this season and that's it in San Antonio and he stops coaching, I think he's still going to be involved. He's going to take on, I would imagine he'll take on a Red Auerbach style patriarch role with the Spurs and maintain some level of presence there if he's not coaching. But, you know, he surprised us once when he did that five-year deal after they won in 2014, and maybe he surprises us again and decides to keep coaching.
Mark Stein covers the NBA for the New York Times and even some tennis, which I'm going to try to get to. And Mark, back to Manu for a minute. Charles Barkley gave you an incredible quote about Manu. He said, quote, "Today my Manu retired. It's like losing a family member. It was an honor and a pleasure to watch you play. See you soon at the Hall of Fame." End of quote. I love that he calls him my Manu. He describes it as losing a family member. Why is it that Ginobili inspired so much love among so many great players in the game? What is it about this guy?
You know the Chuckster doesn't, he's not a warm and fuzzy I love you kind of guy. So even Ginobili got to him. And he like Duncan, just a sensational teammate. I mean, I've never heard a teammate say a bad word about the guy. And look, he was a great entertainer the way he played. There was nobody like him. Just the craft, the stuff he would try, the passing, the wild way he played that, you know, Greg Popovich ultimately embraced and instead of trying to fight him on it. But the other thing is the guy just won everywhere he was, every team he ever played on. The guy was just a serial winner. And, obviously anybody who watches TNT knows that Barkley loved him. And like you said, it's universal. I mean, he is, I've been lucky. I've been there for all five of the Spurs championships. Manu was part of four of them. But I have to tell you, the best Manu scene, the one that will stick with me, the one I will remember, was the 2016 Olympics, his swan song with Argentina. The U.S. destroyed Argentina in that game. And the whole second half, the Argentine fans just sang to Manu Ginobili and Scola, thanking them for the last 15 amazing years. And that was really one of the coolest things that I've ever had a chance to cover.
I mean, Mark, it seems like it's kind of cliche and trite to say it, but the guy literally was as good of a dude as he was a player, as good of a guy as he was a player. Because after that game that you mentioned, I mean, he was so wasted emotionally and physically exhausted, yet he still took the time after that game to make sure that he met with the English-speaking media so they got their few quotes. I mean, what's that tell you about him as a person?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the reason why the media loves Manu, he was the one Spur who actually liked to talk, or at least made us think he did. I mean, obviously Duncan kept it close to the vest. Pop's relationship with the media is pretty well chronicled. You know, to be fair, Tony's been good with us too, but Manu was the one guy who was always in that locker room. He was always ready to talk. And, if you look around, you know, the next bad word about him will be the first. You know, people will say, oh, he was a flopper and, he brought all this flopping into the league. But I think that's an exaggeration. I mean, the dude, to me, he's a winner. Look at his record. Look what he did in Italy. Look what he did with Argentina. Look at how big a role he had in the Spurs. Winning is what he's going to be remembered for.
Mark Stein, my guest, one last thought about that. You could talk about how he brought flopping to the game. That's not how I remember this guy. I tend to think, or I'll remember him, as the guy that brought the Euro step to the NBA. How much of the credit for that goes to him?
Yeah, he probably doesn't get enough for that. And, Harden's obviously taken it to a whole new level. But no question, he that's a big part of his story. And the other thing, Nick Van Smack, I mean, he had a great tweet yesterday saying, whether this guy did not care if he started, did not care if he was on the bench, he was 100% about team. And when peers say things like that, that's obviously the highest praise that an athlete can get.
Hey, Mark, go ask Melo how he feels about the prospect of coming off the bench with the Rockets. I mean, seriously, what does that say about this guy? A Hall of Famer like Manu, and he was willing to come off the bench. It didn't bother him, did it? And if it did, he sure didn't let on.
Yeah, I think, I think it was my old ESPN colleague, Zach Lowe, who had a quote from Pop a few years ago where Pop basically said, if Manu made an issue of it, we would have started him, but he never made an issue of it. Mm. And if you really studied the Spurs in the playoffs, whenever things were going bad, you know, that was Pop's move. If Manu was starting, move him to the bench. If Manu was on the bench, make him a starter. Like, that was always the card that Pop had to play when he needed to change things around.
Mark Stein writes for the New York Times. You know, I could talk to you more about Manu, but let me ask you this before you go. Because, Mark, you're a man of many talents. You've been moonlighting as a tennis writer for the New York Times covering Julia Glushko. First off, how did that come about, and what has she been like, or what's it been like to cover her?
Yeah, I mean, it's been fun. You know, she's probably a little-known player for your audience, but, you know, I have a family background in Israel. She's Israel's best woman player, and basically she let me be part of her team for this U.S. Open, and I only could manage a week, so I was with her all through qualifying. She got through her three qualifying matches, and today I had to come back home, which I really ruined the mojo, and luckily she's not superstitious. She just won an incredible first-round match today against Monica Niculescu from Romania. But look, I know you're a tennis guy too, and I guess the big point of it is I was never good enough or even close to good enough to even pretend to dream about playing in the U.S. Open. So to go there as an assistant coach is pretty damn fun.
No, it's amazing. Really quickly, Mark, lay this out. First of all, what's it like to come through qualifying rounds just to get to the main draw? I mean, how grueling is that? And
yeah,
also, where do you have to be ranked?
The pressure is brutal because, you know, the money in the U.S. Open, you know, this player in particular, Julia Glushko, amazing year. She came to New York with a record of 45-14, but mostly playing small events all year long. For her efforts, she made $30,000 going 45-14. You can't play much better than that. Just qualifying for the U.S. Open, she made $54,000. So there's a lot of money on the line. You know, tennis is a brutal game. You're out there by yourself. So any tennis fan, if you have not been to the U.S. Open, go to U.S. Open qualifying. It's free, and it is, you will see players out there fighting for their lives.
Well, I mean, what's it like? I mean, you're off on a side court, right? Don't you have to win three rounds just to get to the main draw?
Three rounds, and, you know, it's basically the players that are ranked between 100 and 250. So it's high level, and it's high pressure. Have you been to the Open? If you haven't, you need to go.
Yeah, no, you're saying it's incredible. It's incredible because New York especially, it's an absolutely amazing thing. He covers the NBA for the New York Times, also some tennis on the side as a side hustle. A Cal State Fullerton legend, Mark Stein, my guest. Mark, great to have you back. Thank you very much.
Anytime for Mr. Rome.
Everybody knows about the risks of driving drunk. You could get in a crash. People could get hurt or killed. But let's take a moment and look at some surprising statistics. Almost 29 people in the United States die every single day in alcohol-impaired vehicle crashes. That's one person every 50 minutes. Even though drunk driving fatalities have fallen by a third in the last three decades, drunk driving crashes still claim more than 10,000 lives every single year. Drunk driving can have a big impact on your wallet also. You could get arrested and incur huge legal expenses. You could possibly even lose your job. So what can you do to prevent drunk driving? Plan a safe ride home before you start drinking. Designate a sober driver or call a taxi. If someone you know has been drinking, take their keys and arrange for them to get a sober ride home. We all know the consequences of driving drunk, but one thing is for sure. You're wrong if you think it's no big deal. Drive sober or get pulled over. So this is year 19 for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. The greatest partnership in the history of the NFL between a head coach and a quarterback has certainly seen some ups and downs over the years. But I'm not sure we've ever seen exactly what went down yesterday. Because as mentioned, the hood went out and gave TB12 a free lesson in how to deal with the media. You know you jacked up your radio interview when the hood is out front cleaning up your mess and teaching you how to deal with the press. You know you probably want a mulligan when the grumpiest red ass to ever step to the mic is out there with a bucket and a mop handling your business for you. That's right. The dude with the bulky sweatshirt, the hand-cut sleeves, and the last place finish in the Mr. Congeniality contest took care of that business that Brady himself could not take care of. That mumbler stepped in front of the mic yesterday and gave an absolute masterclass in how to handle a question about Alex Guerrero.
What's the reason to let Alex Guerrero back on the team, Mike?
Yeah, I'm not going to get on all the responsibilities. All the people in our organization, we'd be here for, you know, a month going through all that. So,
Bill, you mentioned you're not going to comment on Alex Guerrero. Is that a rule that you've also passed on to the players to not comment on Alex or Alex?
Yeah, I just look, we're not going to get into our staff responsibilities and all that. I mean, we'd be here for a week talking about that. So we're not getting into that.
Not that hard, right? Not that hard. Get asked a question that you don't like. In fact, that guy's never been asked a question he did like. Get asked a question that you don't like and then give an absolute nothing burger of an answer. I mean, it's nonsensical. It barely addresses the question. It's barely decipherable or audible, but it completely shuts down that line of questioning. It seems pretty simple, pretty basic. Now, go ahead and contrast that with what Tom did yesterday when he was doing his weekly paid hit on WEEI. He gets asked a couple of questions about his business partner and body man getting his economy plus ducat back on aircraft. And instead of just running his gap and spinning to something else, he melts down, he pulls the ripcord, and he took what should have been a non-story and single-handedly turned it into the biggest NFL story of that day.
He had said in his opinion that all this stuff had been overblown, that he and Belichick actually had a pretty good relationship even then. Would you say that was true?
I said I don't want to get into it.
Okay. Go ahead, Evan.
Yeah. I mean, everyone knows it's well documented how, you know, the work that he and I do together.
No, I know. I understand that. I'm just trying to figure out because I saw the reports this weekend that he's traveling with the team. Was he on the sideline on Friday?
Yeah. All right, guys. Have a great day. I'll talk to you later.
I mean, again, that's not on the guy asking the question. That's on the guy answering the question. Right, Tom, it's well documented the work that you two have do together. We know this. What's not well documented is how did he get back on that airplane? Is he back on the sideline? What changed? That's not well documented. I mean, look, that's a question that seemingly everybody in the world knew was coming except for the one guy who had to answer it. It's not hard to understand why people are asking about Alex Guerrero. This dude allegedly nearly Yoko Ono'd the greatest dynasty in modern NFL history. He reportedly got his office yanked from him out of Foxborough. His sideline pass revoked. His seat on the team bird given away. It's news because of how important he is to Brady. Brady will tell you at every turn how important this guy is to him. And then all those things happened, and now apparently he's back rolling with the team. It's a thing. Especially on that team, especially considering it reportedly was driving a wedge between the greatest coach ever and the greatest quarterback ever. Yet Brady, the most prepared guy ever, was not prepared to deal with a couple of softballs about it. And then he freaked out and ejected when it came up. Hanging up during an interview is never a good look, but especially doing it during that interview, because that line of questioning was not unfair, it was not offensive. I mean, that's not some dude cracking on his daughter. That's a dude asking a benign question and a follow-up about his business partner and a guru. And Brady could not have handled that any worse than he did. And Belichick could not have handled it any better, which makes Brady look even worse. Again, you know it's a horrible look when the hood is doing his own spot on WEEI and handles it like a relative boss.
A couple weeks ago, Coach, when we first sat down with you, I asked you about the role of Alex Guerrero, and you said that he wasn't part of the organization. You didn't want to get into it.
That's right.
Today, I thought you said something about you didn't want to get into members of your staff and their responsibilities. I wonder if you could clarify.
Yeah, no, he's not a member of the organization. He works at TV12. I think we're all aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have people in our traveling party. Some are in the organization, most are, and some aren't. We have people in various capacities that work with us on game day, and again, every team has that, you know, so we have that too. So,
are you surprised how much attention this guy has gotten?
Who are you talking about?
Alex. As far as the discussion of what his role is.
Yeah, I don't listen to this show a lot. So,
it's a good
with
show.
All due respect. I don't really know what you guys talk about.
Hysterical.
I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of talk about the Red Sox.
Oh, there is.
We try to keep it to a minimum, though.
We'll get to it.
look, you ask the questions, I'll give you the answers. I mean, I don't really control what the conversation is on these shows. That's your job, so I'll leave that to you.
I mean, listen to this guy. Look at the way he handled that. Look at the way he handled that. Charm and disarm. He answered the question. He didn't shut down. He didn't pull the ripcord. He didn't hang up on anybody. And in case you didn't follow that, let me run that back very quickly, but I want to read it a little more audibly so you can understand what the guy said through the mumbles.
No. Yeah, no, he's not a member of the organization.
Let me read this. Let me say what he said, all right, so you understand exactly what he said so Brady knows what to do next time. This is the hood.
He's not a member of the organization. He works in TB12. I think we're all aware of that. We have people in our traveling party, and some are in the organization. Most are.
See, it helps when I do it, right? Now you know what he's saying.
Some are in the organization. Most are, and some aren't. We have people in various capacities that work, again, and every team has that. We have that, too. Again, you need some extra people on game day. Venue department, there are going to be specialty people on medical staff and security and so forth. We have other people who are full-time. Some are, let's call it, game day type employees because of just higher demands of certain areas on game day.
Then the host jumps in with, I know this is the last thing you care about. Are you more surprised? Or are you surprised about how much attention this guy's gotten? And then Hood came with the gold. Then he came with the gold. And I quote,
"No, honestly, I don't honestly listen to this show a lot, with all due respect. I don't really know what you guys talk about. I'm sure there's a lot of talk about the Red Sox, but if you ask questions, I'll give you the answers. I don't control that, so I'll leave it all with you. And with all honesty, I don't really listen to the show. That's how you do it.
Listen, this is how you do this. Charm and disarm. You answer the question. You crack a joke. You talk about how, yeah, guys, I really don't listen to your show very much. You ask the questions. I'll answer them. Key being, I'll answer them. Then you move on. I mean, the Hood's never looked better with the media, and Brady's never looked worse. And if the Hood can figure that out, Brady should be able to as well. At least he better. Because the only reason, again, that that's a story is because Brady made it a story. It's easy to blame the media for everything. The media does deserve a lot of the blame, but not in this case. This time it's not on the media, it's on the player. A player who should have known a hell of a lot better and should have been prepared for it. We all were. How was he not? Even Belichick was ready for it. And he handled that thing like a boss. Had a little gleam in his eye.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by the whole thing. I don't listen to you guys very much. You probably talk some baseball on your show or something. No disrespect. Anyway,
But you know it's bad. You know it's bad when Belichick looks good and Brady looks bad in dealing with the media. Like the most charming guy ever, the most aw shucks charming guy ever couldn't handle it, and the reddest ass ever handled it like a boss. Willie McGinnis. You can see Willie tonight on NFL Network's NFL Total Access. It's at 7 p.m. Eastern. He joins us right now before that program. Willie, it's so good to have you back. Willie, how are you? Good morning.
I'm doing well, Jim. How you doing, man?
Willie, great. Great to visit with you. Thanks for making time. I appreciate it very much.
Always.
Let me start with Odell Beckham Jr. He gets a new deal. It was announced yesterday. Willie, what's your reaction to the deal? And in your mind, what does he mean to the Giants and their offense?
I think he showed, first of all, that he was capable of playing at a high level. I know, in my opinion, there was never a physical thing about his talent, if he's going to bounce back. It was more about if he was willing to do the right thing, if he was going to take the next step, you know, maturity-wise as a leader, which a lot of guys follow him and are on record saying he's a great leader, he's a hard worker. They were probably a little reluctant because of some of the past things, but, you know, I think they saw what they needed to see. Man. And he's a rare talent, Jim. Players like him don't come around, you know, every day. So he got a deal done. I think it's deserving. That makes one of the best offense.
My man, I'm going to pick you up, Willie. Willie McGinnis, we've got a bad connection. So Adam Hawk's going to pick him up. And see, that's so interesting to me that Willie said he is a rare talent, a talent that you do not see very often, and that he's established himself as a leader. The folks that are there have seen enough that they believe, and he said the physical talent was never the issue. Try it again. Well, sorry about that. We lost you momentarily. I think that's really high praise, what you just said. I mean, you've been around some of the best, and you feel like he's a really rare talent. Well, in your experience, where do you come out on this? And I want to preface this by saying, I'm not there. I haven't spoken to him. I don't know. But I like that deal. I like what I've seen. I like what I hear. From your experience, can a wide receiver lead from the front? Can he be a really strong presence in that locker room? Are you looking for that guy, given that contract now?
I don't think it's position-based, you know, who's the leaders. I think it's the guys that come in. First of all, you got to play at a high level. You can't be a talker. You can't be a rah-rah guy if you're not out there producing on the football field. So we know he does that, and he's one of the best, one of the top three in his, you know, in the league. Not just receiver, but players in the league. The other thing is, you know, you lead through example. Your work ethic, what you're doing when nobody's watching, when the cameras are not on, you know, the weight room, the film study, all those different things. All those, you know, you compile all those things up, Jim, when it comes to leadership. And I don't think a lot of people pay on his teammates. I'll say teammates. Look too much into the emotional things that he goes through on the field. Now, he knows, and he's had conversations with the organization and Eli and all those guys, that I know you're passionate, I know you're emotional, and those things can be a distraction. I think he's matured enough to understand that and how to channel his emotions differently now. Else they wouldn't have been, you know, forgiven that much money and guaranteed money and invested in him and his future.
Willie McGinnis joining us. You know, Willie, I'm not sure that I thought that you and I would have a conversation, and so early in this conversation I would ask you about the Cleveland Browns, and yet here we are. You spent some time at that camp. You've taken a good look at these guys. Let me ask you about Myles Garrett. You were showing him some of the tricks of the trade, and you said of him, and I quote, Willie, I don't think there's a player at Garrett's position who has his combination of size, strength, speed, explosiveness, and athleticism. Once again, really high praise from you. If he puts it all together, what's his upside and how good can he be?
Wow. I mean, I don't think he has a ceiling. I mean, he's one of those players. He reminds me of Von Miller. He reminds me of some of those dynamic edge rushers. You don't find guys 270 plus that can run, that is that explosive, that has that physical ability to lean, to bend, that athleticism, that can run the way he does, the way his body moves, and have the length. It's rare, man. Again, I use that word. It's rare. And he's gifted. He's been winning on, I would say, a couple moves, if that. You know, he has a dip and rip, and he has the speed to power. And if he could add some more moves to his arsenal, man, and he will, because he's smart, he listens, he digests information, that could just make him, you know, he could be one of the best pass rushers of our time if he continues to grow and learn. And I think the other key, Jim, is to stay healthy. You know, he's got to stay on the football field.
Willie McGinnis joining us. You can watch him tonight on NFL Network's NFL Total Access, again, 7 p.m. Eastern. You know, Willie, one of the concerns seemingly about, and I want to stay with the Browns for one more minute, about Baker Mayfield coming in was that maybe he had the wrong attitude, maybe he could end up being a bust. Again, you've been around this league a long, long time. Willie, can you tell a player who has the right attitude from the wrong attitude? How does that show up, and what are you looking for in young players?
Well, I'm looking for that it. I mean, especially at the quarterback position, I want you to be a little brash and a little bold. I want you to be confident in your ability and in yourself. I want guys to want to gravitate and be around you. I mean, at the quarterback position, you gotta encompass all those things, Jim. Or else you're not, like, how can you lead an offense? How are you going to get guys to buy in and listen and respect you at a certain level? It just doesn't happen. You can't be quiet, docile, and an introvert, I think, at that position. I think you got to have that alpha mentality, and I think he has that. I think he's fought from the bottom, so he's worked and earned everything he's had, and he knows that, and he continuously wants to work and be the best and prove all the doubters and haters wrong. And, you know, the first thing I remember, you know, when I was talking to some of the people at the Browns, when he first came into the facility, you know, when they're going to have their interviews and different things of that nature, maybe he wasn't number one on their list at the time. But when he came into that facility and guys started to gravitate and he made some type of call and everybody started coming around and they saw the energy that he exuded to everybody else, for them it was a no-brainer.
talking to William McGinnis. Now, Willie, you recently did a video for NFL Football Operations where you broke down proper tackling form. When you hear the current players complain about the new helmet rule, what kind of a reaction do you have?
My reaction is the rule is for their safety. You know, we always talk about preserving the league and preserving our players. I think most players understand that these rules that are coming out is trying to protect them. It's not for the league to try to just incorporate rules, just to throw rules out there. It's for their safety. And, you know, from the young kids that I work with to the NFL guys, if we continue to let the game go the way it's going, you're going to have more and more head injuries and concussions and deal with those different things. So the league took initiative to put something in place to protect these players, offensively now and defensively. So I think it's a good rule. I think it's going to take some getting used to, like any other rule does. Like the catch rule has, you know, had people talking about it all year for the last few years. This is a new rule. There's a little more talk because it's preseason and the referees are figuring out, and they're human, so they're going to make mistakes in calling this, like they make, Jim, in every single rule. They make mistakes in holdings. They make mistakes in pass interference. They make mistakes with the catch. Whatever it is, there's a human element, don't forget, to these referees. You don't want everything going to the booth, and they're going to make mistakes. I think just because it's new, it's the new rule, and it's in preseason, people were complaining a lot and talking about it. But when you break it down, and I don't like to use this stat, but when you break it down, there was only 1.5 flags per game called. So it's not changing a game like you hear most people say. I think it's irresponsible for anybody in the NFL, players or coaches, to say that it could, you know, get people fired or change the complex of a game. Any call can change the complex of a game. And all sides on third and on fourth and whatever can change the game. A pass interference call can change the complex of the game. I mean, understand, they're trying to protect these players. And, you know, it's not something that they're just putting in or incorporating just to do it.
Willie McGinnis, my guest. Willie, one last thought off the floor, or off the field, I should say, onto the floor. You are a SoCal legend. You are a longtime Lakers season ticket holder, or were. Man, what did you think when you saw LeBron joining the purple and gold? Was that kind of surreal? What was that like for you?
I was pissed off because I gave away my season ticket a year ago because I was like, man, they're not getting it together.
Wow.
We need a superstar. I thought we was going to get Durant. That didn't happen, Jim. And next thing you know, I heard the rumors, and I was like, yeah, I've been hearing rumors for the last 3 to 4 years who was going to come in. And lo and behold, LeBron signs, and I gave away my tickets. I feel like an idiot. It's great for Laker Nation, man. It's great for the city. You know, he does so much economically, man, for wherever he goes. And I think as a leader, as a guy still playing at a high level, one of the best players, some people say the best player to ever play, you know, to come to L.A., I tell all my buddies and everybody, we've never not had superstars on the Laker team. We've always had this team ran and engined by superstars, and we needed one, and they signed them. It's great for everything, man. I just hope guys can feed off of him and we can get back on track as Lakers.
Willie, I was going to cut you loose, but I got to ask you really quickly, you know, being a USC great, what do you make of JT Daniels? I mean, he skipped his last year of high school. He tests in. He's ready to go. He is eager. He wins that job outright. What about his upside?
No surprise. I wasn't surprised. His mental capacity for holding and understanding information and how to break it down. He's far advanced when it comes to all of the younger guys. When it comes to that, he's been under Jordan Palmer, a guy who's been with a lot of good quarterbacks, a lot of great quarterbacks in this league. So he's been learning. And, you know, when he came in, I knew it was his position to lose. It wasn't a doubt.
Covered a lot of ground. An NFL Network analyst. He is a 3-time Super Bowl champ, a 15-year NFL vet. You want to make sure that you watch Willie McGinnis tonight on NFL Network's NFL Total Access, 7 p.m. Eastern. Willie, could not appreciate you anymore. Thank you so much for doing it.
My pleasure, Jim. Thanks, boss.
My
Always
man.
A pleasure.
Andy in Rockland. Andy, good morning. What's up? How are you?
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Andy. What's up?
So, first off, I don't know if I should talk about the basil, but what I really want to talk about was OJ.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, back in the day, and I think it was like 1988 or 89.
Right.
My girlfriend worked at the Marriott Hotel in Palm Desert.
Are you getting coached up by your boyfriend?
I went to see her, and OJ was there.
Where? Well, hold on.
At the Palm Desert Hotel.
Okay, the Palm Desert Hotel back in the 80s. You went to see a girlfriend, and OJ was there. Then what happened?
We had drinks with him, and I think she might have had sex with him.
Oh, you think or you know?
Yeah.
Which?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, was he? What was he like back then?
He was very nice and clean.
Okay, Andy, thank you very much. Andy in Rockland. Maybe we stick to the podcast, Andy.
Good night,